Marcello, the ROI guy.
Hi, this is April Morley.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission, that's to help you accelerate, optimize value articulation, communication, and quantification in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And to help us to do that today is Fiona Leeson. She is the Director of Customer Value for financial software app and marketplace firm Finastra. Fiona started her career with Finastra almost 30 years ago. People don't stick with companies the way they used to, Fiona. So kudos for you for that. I think you started in marketing from what I researched, and then you migrated to sales. You were a solution consultant specialist for a while, and then you eventually found your way to value about a decade ago, and now you're leading those important efforts. So welcome, Fiona.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and thanks for inviting me on the podcast. Looking forward to the chat.
Awesome. So as a value leader, program success, it's got many different dimensions, many elements that have to come together. And we'd love to pick your brain about these because of your extensive experience and because of some of the changes and evolution that you've gone through recently. First of all, when it comes to value, the right scope can be really important. Talk about selecting the right scope for the program.
Sure. And I think, you know, depending on where you're at, whether you're starting a brand new value program or you're recalibrating following organizational change or starting again, really important to, number one, keep the buyer and the customer's life cycle in the back of your mind all of the time. I think looking at the value life cycle and understanding where you are, I suppose, in maturity within the organization in that will help to kind of guide you in terms of where you start with your scope. You know, ultimately, I think we're all trying to do more with less as well at the moment. So in terms of scope, you know, you're not going to have value consultants out there meeting customers in every deal. That's just not viable. I think it never really was the kind of case in our case anyway. We definitely split that kind of scope between working on business cases directly with customers and then having value enablement and really value selling at scale alongside your direct engagement is really where your scope needs to start. You have to be thinking about that from the start. Quite often we start with a very, maybe a reactive value selling kind of model where, you know, you have some value consultants, you don't have very many and they're being called into deals very quickly. And really that's not scalable, right? So we've got to think about the start. And if you can set a foundation in terms of your scope at the very start, it means you're setting yourself up for success. You can avoid that reactive value selling approach and really thinking about the type of deals that you've got in your organization. You know, we had definitely a different scope between some very, you know, high value, long sales cycle deals, you know, that low volume of those. And then we had, you know, high volume, low value deals, right? So totally different kind of approach for each of them. So really looking at, I suppose what I'm trying to say is looking at what is in front of you, what's your current state, what's your level of maturity in that value life cycle, because your ultimate goal has got to be to kind of work through the value life cycle, right? From, you know, lead generation through your sales execution, your value realization, and feeding that back into your go-to-market messaging. So look at where you are today. Where are you strong? Where are the quick wins? And building your scope out of that, I think, is a good place to start.
It's a great point. And in terms of maturity, you know, some organizations are basically starting with nothing. Some are, you know, starting with something, but looking to scale. You know, what do you think about having the right value framework, the right content to really make the team successful?
The content is so important. I mean, I think having that consistent framework in place and a lot of the perception, I think, around value that we see both from our sellers and generally within the organization, maybe, and even sometimes in sales leadership, it's all about the ROI number. It's all about quantifying value, financial justification. Now, we know that's at the heart of it, but really value storytelling, if you can combine, you know, your quantification with value storytelling, it's such a game changer. And it does take, you know, I think, more effort in your content creation. to be able to get to that point. You're really engaging stakeholders from around the business and your customers. You know, if you can, you know, one of the first exercises we did originally, actually, we brought in an external company to help us talk to customers about what they were achieving, what business outcomes they were seeing from our solutions. And we fed that back into that content creation. And I think if you can get that right and really tell a value story that will persuade and back up those numbers and really kind of give more transparency to that. Because I think so many customers look at that. If you give them a black box kind of ROI number out of a spreadsheet, for example, they just, you know, it's not real to them. Mm-hmm. Or if you can persuade them, tell a value story that resonates with them, that's what makes the difference. And that's what's, you know, when you're building out that framework, it's got to be based around that. That's what I truly believe that. And I think, you know, and focusing it in around personas and getting that emotional connection with your customer as well and your buyers to really hit home on what is going to make them take action. And I think the numbers then are the icing on the cake when you quantify that value.
Yeah. In today's tight economy, certainly the numbers are important and the financial justification is needed. But if you don't spark and inspire someone to change, it's easier for them to stay still because it's a risky investment environment. And then we see that trust becomes really important nowadays. Probably 50% of the decision now is based on a lack of confidence in the decision. So it's easy to fall and do nothing in the solution and in the decision process. They will move forward and they'll be very confident and happy in that decision. One of the things that I know you mentioned was, look, you're not going to be able to grow value and value practice by just throwing headcount at it. None of us have that luxury. Not that we ever did, as you said, but I think now even more than ever, you know, organizations are looking to do less with sales, you know, overhead, value resources, working on the deal, sales specialists, customer success even. And the more that you can help to scale these things, the better. Talk about some of what you've done at Finastra, first level, second level, third level, of trying to scale the program without having to throw a whole bunch of business value analysts at the problem.
Yeah, I think you're asking about scaling the how we scale with the analysts without the analysts. I think for us, I think we got to a point where we knew we had to go down the value automation route in order to really scale up. I mean, I think there's other ways as well you can scale things like value discovery. I'm a real believer in value discovery being the cornerstone of everything that we do. If we can't do that right and we can't scale that, then you know, you're really going to be in trouble. I think it feeds into every part of the value life cycle, and in particular into our value automation tools as well. And I think I'll say one more thing on this, because I want to talk about value automation as well. But I think there's a perception sometimes that value discovery has to be an event or a workshop or something that's organized. And really, my mantra is that every customer interaction is an opportunity for value discovery to take place.
Yes.
Every customer-facing person in the sales organization can do value discovery if they know how and if you bring that to the table. And I think that's a really key part about scaling, because if everybody can do that, then we're getting all that information that we need. I think the next thing then is around value automation and moving towards, we moved into value automation a number of years ago, and you will never ever reach the kind of scale that you can do with value automation with PowerPoint and with spreadsheets. You'll never get, it's a game changer. It's a whole other level. And it's not just about the scale and the speed that you can turn around a business case. It's how it changes for us the buying experience for our customers. I mean, how we interact with them is very different. We can leverage some of these tools to do things like maturity assessments with them and really start talking about their business in detail in a collaborative, transparent way that's so credible to the customer, I think, as well. And bringing them through a value assessment that they help to tweak and change and manipulate the data in with us is a completely different experience from just presenting a number to them. So I think from a scale perspective, that is just a game changer for sure. It made a huge difference for us.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, you like you said, you cannot have a person in every customer engagement. So it gives you that opportunity to deliver out value justification to hundreds or thousands of customers instead of, you know, tens or 50s, depending on how many people you have. So when it comes to the world of training, you need the go-to-market teams to really have the foundational skills to talk about value with customers. If they have value automation, they need to be able to deliver it and activate it. How important is it to get that right?
Oh, it's so important. I think it's more than training can be. It's not a one-off event, I think. You know, I think that's what I've learned over the years. I spent many years training sellers to use spreadsheets and it didn't work. When we came to the automation tools, though, we kind of it changed the game on that as well. But really, you have to do the same. It's not just about training. Yes, you've got to teach them the mechanics of it, but you've also got to build their confidence and give them the tools that they need to be comfortable talking about asking for data, right? And how do you do that in a conversational way and not in, you know, here's a list of data points that I need. So those small things about giving them the confidence to not be afraid to be asked a question about ROI or anything like that, I think that's so important. Getting through that, but it's also about practice. I mean, what we did in our training programs is that we would do the training, but they had to be certified. So they had to actually go in and use the tool as part of the certification on an opportunity that they were working on. And they would have to go get hands-on and actually start thinking about how they would use it with a customer. And that was the test that they had to do at the end of it. And then following on from that, that's not even enough. I think following on from that, we would offer a handhold on their first time doing it. So that took a bit of resource at the start, but it was so worth it because we could see then that they had the confidence to just go and do it. We were there in case they needed. And once they used it that one time, and they got through it and they saw the reaction from the customer and how it went, they were using it. That's what we saw. Those who started using it as early adopters used it again and again and again, would go in with that value selling approach and they learned as they were doing it. And yet we were able to give them in those automation tools, the messages, the talking points. They had a crutch there the whole time to follow them through. It was a process. Standardized flow through the value story, which they couldn't really go wrong with. They were just afraid of the questions they were getting, and that's what we really tried to allay with the training. And the other thing we did in the training I didn't mention was that we covered objections. So very kind of clearly went into seller objections to using the tools and the online automation value assessments with customers. You know, they were afraid, oh, our customer's going to say we do this ourselves. Well, they don't have the insights that we have. We're going to teach them. We're going to bring insights. So handling all those kind of objections as to, you know, what they were worried about and concerned about really made a difference as well in terms of getting the training right and the enablement right.
Awesome.
Yeah, it really is about getting over that initial confidence hurdle and concern of how the customer will respond. So I love what you said about just go with them the first time, help them build it out, help them deliver it, let them see the impact, and then they're on their journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So we talked a little bottom up. We've got the right story, the contents there. You've got the tools. The sellers have been trained, certified, they're supported. What about the opposite? What about top down? How important has executive support been to the program? And the other thing that we're recognizing is that there needs to be a patience elements involved here. Like it's not just a, oh, okay, we'll implement this and you've got a little bit of support, but then it wanes, that it really has to be persistent.
Oh, absolutely. To scale adoption, top-down endorsement is essential. Mm-hmm. You'll get started and you'll obviously get your funding, you know, if you're going to go down the value automation route. So you've got some support initially. For me, I think, and for what was a game changer, I think, in our success was that we had strategic initiatives identified within the sales organization that really aligned with our value selling at scale program. So we had a value selling at scale program. That was one of the initiatives. The other one was about improving our buyer's experience right throughout the life cycle. And that was a strategic initiative of our VP of sales at the time. And of course, you know, what we were doing was core to that, right? So we had that, and we used that internally for, you know, when we wanted to get our CRM integration up the list of priorities. Well, we're like, it's a strategic initiative, we're doing this. So it made such a difference. It made such, getting the training, getting, you know, our sales managers to ensure everybody was, you know, completing the training. That kind of top-down endorsement was just really made a difference. It really did. I think the other thing you mentioned around, you know, how do we keep that going? I think one of the key success elements as well, which requires executive level endorsement, is if you can embed your value selling program in business as usual, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a value, let's do value selling tomorrow on this deal. It's every day. It's in their face every day. Your value assessments are launched from your CRM solution. The reports are attached. If you go and get approval for discounting, you've got to show your value report. Yeah, I know what the value is to this customer. So bringing all of those elements together, whatever it is, creating it, that business as usual, and making value selling the norm and not the exception, mm-hmm. you really require that executive level kind of endorsement to get that business as usual embedded in the program. And in terms of the patients, you were saying, how else do you, you know, look, we have a lot of experience in this. You've got to track everything. We track to everything, right? Because you're going to have to report back up. At some stage, you're going to have to re-justify, whether it's your automation tools or whether it's your whole program, maybe you're going to have to re-justify. So tracking everything is so important. I know we all talk about, you know, win rates, increasing deal size, accelerating sales cycles, all really important and really valuable. But sometimes they're not so easy to track, or they take time to get solid numbers. So in your first 12 months of having an automation program, for example, you're not going to, you'll start looking at win rates, but you're not really going to get a clear picture. In our case, we have long sales cycles for some of our products. So, you know, we weren't going to see that. So what we did was, and was really important, was look at all the quick wins. So we knew we wanted to improve buying experience. For example, we got all the sellers, we created, you know, interviewed all the sellers who'd use the tools. What difference did this make to your deal? In digital sales, I'm getting more callbacks than I ever did because they're really interested in this tool. Mm-hmm. I'm getting access to more senior level executives than I usually do because I'm bringing insights and I'm bringing information and best practice capabilities, things like that. We're having more open dialogue. They're telling me more, they're giving me more information. So all of those, what I would call the things that lead to better win rates and increases in deal size, we gathered all of those insights and we reported them back up, right? And that really bought us some time. In one instance as well, I've got to share, we had a customer agree to let us record our customer interaction with an online maturity assessment and value assessment tool. And we shared that with the VP of sales afterwards. And it was just amazing to see the change in the attitude of the customer and how more open they became, mm-hmm. that they started discussing their business in front of us in the context of our solutions, and how they warmed up and started really sharing, really getting into it, and really appreciated the interaction. And we were able to share that as well. So for me, all of those, that's getting that patience and getting that, you know, show those quick wins, those early wins that you're getting. And we really hit home hard on that. And it made a huge difference. We were tracking everything as well. We were ready with the numbers when we got to that. But really important to track everything.
That's such a great set of advice there. So Fiona, when it comes to, you talked about scaling, you talked about getting executive leadership support. What about hiring the team members and really building up the consulting organization?
Yeah, and I think as we talked about earlier, a value program is more than just about having, you know, very experienced value consultants creating business cases with clients. And I think if you hire a team who are brilliant and can only do that, then you're going to be stuck. I think you've really got to look wider than that. You've got to set expectations when you're hiring as well. You know, some value consultants who are, you know, very experienced might not want to do sales training, right? And it's a key part of the role now. So I think And I think as well, having people who can build that content creation is so, so important. And there's a skill in that, and really looking for that skill and being able to bring all of that information together, to gather the stakeholders, to create the value stories. It's not easy. I think that's the hardest part. Building the actual tools is easy. The content creation is hard, and you've really got to hire to that. So if you can find somebody who can do both really well, then you're quids in. It's great. But otherwise, you've got to get a balance in your team that can, that you can cover that. In our case as well, we had, as I mentioned earlier, an offshore back office team who helped with a lot of the heavy lifting in the background, and they ended up building our automation tools. But they weren't really experienced enough to build the content, right, to create that content. So it meant we took a lot. When we started out originally, we were all building all the tools and spreadsheets ourselves. So we had this team who would take away a lot of the effort. And they were lower cost than our high-end value consultants, but they made a huge impact, really huge impact. It was a real success for us. So that's something to consider as well, as to whether you can balance out the resources. If you're very small, you may have to find people who can just do everything and do it well.
Yeah. And Fiona, I think that's good advice, not just for those leaders looking to hire, but those practitioners who might find themselves looking. You've got to be much more multidimensional now. It's not about just being able to crunch the numbers and prepare the business case and be able to present with the customer. There's a lot of other back office kind of activities, the training, the storytelling, content development, and that area. And that brings us to another point, which is there's also an evangelism and a promotion to any successful program, right? If the sellers don't know it exists, customer success doesn't know it exists, you've got to constantly be promoting this. What are some practices that have been successful for you there?
Yeah, a few ideas I think I can share. One of the things I'll say overarching that kind of theme is that one of our goals was to make sellers feel that they were left out if they weren't taking, you know, value selling behaviors, using our value automation tools, that they would feel like they were not part of the party. So we made a huge effort. As I said, we recorded a lot of success videos, 5-minute videos with our sellers who'd use the tools and got a result. We had loads, and we pushed them in every opportunity we had. We had great endorsement from some of our sales, our regional sales managers, who would, you know, send to his team, look, but this person's just done, why aren't you doing the same? So we really kind of wanted to build that momentum that, you know, you're not part of the, you know, you're not in, if you're not using these, you're out. So, or, you know, you're missing something. And I think those success stories were really, really important all around to show this is really making a difference in people's deals. And we did get reaction from that. And we did get a lot of buy-in to kind of the sellers feeling like they wanted to try this out. And we'd get more contact from them asking for help with them. So that's definitely something I think, promoting the success and just building that momentum that this is what we're doing. As we said before, it's part of business as usual. It's the norm, not the exception. And creating that environment of value selling behaviors, I think, is really, really important. And also just, I go back to that embedding in BAU, all the kind of normal communications that come out within your organization, we found this really impactful, not to be sending separate things out, but to embed yourself in the sales newsletter, if there is one from the VP of sales. Whatever those normal channels are, you get value into that every time and have a story every time to put out there. And I think that made a difference as well.
Sounds like on top of all the skills required, you can add some internal public relations and marketing on top of it to get the recognition out there. So if you had to sum it all up, what's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
I think really it's look at where, again, as I said, look at where you are, what do you need to do in terms of scoping that, and go for some of the quick wins as well. I think, you know, content creation we've mentioned is so important, and value discovery. If you get those right, I think you're just so way ahead of the game. You're way ahead because you've got the right value stories in place. You can build that out and enable that. But, and I think value discovery, as I said, is such a quick win, no cost to actually scale across the organization before you maybe have budget for value automation. You can do value discovery. It feeds into every part of the value lifecycle. And I think that would be my key thing, to focus on those areas.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Value Coffee Talk podcast, Fiona.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure. It was great having the chat.
If you haven't done so yet, please sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective. You can do that on LinkedIn. You can do that on geniusdrive.com so we can stay in touch with you in the latest events, tools, research, insights, a lot coming your way here over the next couple of weeks and months. If you like this episode, Fiona had incredible amounts of advice, fear of missing out, one of them, FOMO. Love it, Fiona. Please hit the like button, subscribe so you can stay up to date and know when we post new episodes, which we're doing so all the time. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing together.